We got Jordan Taylor on the show. My first guest making a reappearance. Very grateful that Jordan's going to make the time. But yeah, if you want to watch the first episode and our previous interview, Jordan is just about the nicest guy on the planet. He gave me like 3 hours of my time. I way overprepared. I took up too much of his time, but he stood with it, and I appreciate it, and he's back for more. But yeah, Jordan, thank you for coming back on the show. What's up?
What's up, man? Appreciate you having me. Glad to be back. Good to see you're thriving, doing well, and yeah, honored to be the first guest on a budding podcast and sports show, man.
Yeah, hey, we're trying. So yeah, let's start with your season a little bit. So yeah, according to EuroBasket, looking at your stats, it looks like you're having a really nice season. You're efficient, shooting well, dropping dimes, and playing on a really good team. How would you assess how your season's going so far?
You know, it's probably been different than any other season I've had. You know, my numbers are not the best, but it's been fun being kind of an old head. I'm the oldest guy on the team for the first time in my career. Playing with Sam Decker, Wisconsin guy, who's the reason why I'm in London, enjoying that. A lot of good things have come from being in London, and it's been good though. Overall, we went to the Final Four in Euro Cup, now going in the playoffs for British Basketball League, where we're the one seed, and you know, we got a lot of talented players. So it's just been, it's been fun. We have a guy named Matt Morgan who's from Cornell, led Ivy League in scoring for 4 years, really, really talented player. So it's been fun watching him and then also trying to help him kind of go through some of the things that I went through 8-9 years ago.
All right. Very cool. Very cool. And for the viewers who are watching this, Jordan and I, like I said, we're going to start talking about his career, and then we'll dive into some kind of the trending topics, hot topics of basketball right now. And maybe we'll agree on things. Maybe we'll disagree. We will see. But yeah, getting back into Jordan's season here. Jordan, yeah, off camera, you just told me, you know, you had a groin injury, and throughout your career, you've dealt with a lot of injuries. How's your health been overall this season and last season?
It's been solid. You know, dealt with injuries here and there, but nothing substantial, nothing serious. You know, groin strain here, calf strain there, but nothing crazy. So very, very fortunate, blessed to not miss a ton of games. You know, we have a great organization, GM, assistant GM, coaching staff, head coach Petr Bozic, Brett Berman, those guys are amazing at trying to, you know, make sure everybody's healthy and understanding, very player friendly, which in Europe is not the norm at all. So it's that's another blessing to be in London. So, but overall, yeah, been healthy, going strong, and you know, we'll see what life has in store for basketball or on the basketball front.
Sure, and yeah, how would you say? You know, you said that you're the old head on your team, the oldest guy. How's your battle been with Father Time? How are you doing?
Man, I aged early just because of injuries. Like you talked about the last time I was on here, I, you know, had a lot of surgeries, like 8 or 9 surgeries starting from the time I was a senior and going to be a senior in college. So a couple of major surgeries, hip surgeries. But considering all that, you know, I'm proud that I've been able to kind of persevere through a lot of that. It slowed me down in terms of athleticism, but now finding ways to affect the game in different ways, you know, more from a cerebral standpoint.
Sure. Well, humble guy, I saw a clip last year of you getting up, you blocking a shot, sending it back. That didn't look too unathletic. Didn't look too Wisconsin-like, you know. That was that was pretty good. So, but yeah, so you know what? The question just came to the top of my mind. I think of that Michael Jordan commercial where it's like 40-year-old MJ playing against 22-year-old MJ, and then like the college MJ shows up. But how would you, whatever age was your prime, one-on-one up to 21, you right now versus you in your prime, what is that score looking like?
Ooh, one-on-one, the young me would probably just much more explosive, much more athletic. So it'd probably be somewhere around, if you go to 7 all-ones, maybe 7, I'll go 7-3, 7-4, the younger. Okay. But yeah, what I mean, it's crazy because now playing the game, in my opinion, it's faster than it's ever been. Obviously, I think that's obvious. It's more wide open, probably more skill and natural talent than there's ever been,
and softer.
I'm not even gonna go that far because I try to steer clear of the soft label or, you know, this, that, and third. But I mean, that's a popular opinion though. So it's all good. So, but either way, you know, it's the one thing about it, it's tough as an older guy is like, there's things that you see and you're like, man, this would be easy if my body would just cooperate, but your brain and your body just don't match up quite how it should. It's not as, in my opinion, not as cerebral of a game. There's a lot of little things that you can get away with in this game, in this style of play, but that's neither here nor there.
Sure. Well, and I know in the past you've contemplated retirement. You know, Robbie Hummel, I don't know if you know this, but Robbie Hummel made a joke about it during one of the Badger games during the broadcast. He was like, Jordan's a guy who's been considering retirement for like 10 years. Forgot exactly what he said, but it's something along those lines. So, it was during one of the Badger games. So, should we get the camera crew? Should we get the Last Dance crew? Is this going to be it for you, Jordan? What's next?
You know what? Well, you know, we'll see in the off season. We'll see. I love London. My girlfriend's here. She's 6 months pregnant. I feel like I found a home in the UK. I've been able to do, you know, again, shout out London Lions, Brett Berman. They allowed me, and a guy, Aaron Radin. They took the production for the league in house. And, you know, all of our games now are shown in almost every regional network in the States, except for maybe Idaho and Montana, maybe. Don't quote me on that, but it's on Bally's North, Bally's South, all that. And I've been able to do some of the broadcasting for the games as well as play.
Cool.
A little Draymond Green action, so to speak. But so we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, if they want me back, what they're trying to build here, I love being a part of. And, you know, the direction that we have it going in right now, coming off a Final Four for the Euro Cup is something special. And hopefully, you know, I would love to be a part of moving forward.
Yes, sir. And when you do hang it up, is sports media and broadcasting, is that what's next for you?
Yeah. Probably trying to follow in Robbie's footsteps. I've had a couple. That's probably why he made that comment, because I've asked Robbie a couple times advice on, you know, how to prepare for games and do things like that. So if God willing, you know, if fortunate enough to get some opportunities to call some games, to go in studio, yeah, why not? If you can make money talking basketball, running your mouth.
Yes, sir.
Maybe talk a little shit. Excuse me. I don't know if it's Twitter. Yeah. My bad.
I'll just put an E logo by the episode.
Expletive, yeah. So talk a little stuff. And, you know, I watch Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith and Shaq, and it's like, they make millions to talk basketball and race each other to a video board. So what more could you want?
Hey, that's the dream. Yeah, man, that's a good life you're living. You got to be, you know, a D1 star. You got to play hoops for how many years you want to play and then move into broadcasting. That's a pretty good gig. That's what I think about every kid dreams of. So, yeah. But, you know, just a thought that popped in my mind is, you know, while you're still playing and a very capable player, let's get a TBT's team for Wisconsin. Just make it happen, Jordan. Like, you know what? Like, if you, I, here's what I think. I think if you, and you're going to say, oh no, they won't listen to me. I think if you say, hey, let's do this, Sam, come on, play. Frank, come on, play. Frank looks up to you. You know, you were the big man on campus when he was a freshman. Be like, oh, Jordan asked me to play. Like, here's the thing. I think if you took it upon yourself and tried getting this thing going, Wisconsin would have the best TBT team. Like, and maybe you don't get everybody, but you guys could get a pretty solid core where, let's say, you get two or three of Nigel, Decker, Frank, bunch of other guys. Like, starting lineup, let's go you, let's go Brad, let's go Nigel, Decker, Frank. Get to play on ESPN, you know, make over 100K when you win it all. Reunite with all your old college buddies. That doesn't sound like that bad of a gig. I know you guys were close. I know T-Jax was working hard on it. He almost made it happen, but it fell through. The university kind of ghosted him. Jordan, well, it's not too late. It's April 23rd. Let's do this thing. Come on. What do you think?
For me, I'm out. I can't do it. You gotta talk to those. You gotta talk to those young guys. Maybe Sam and Frank and Nigel get it going. But
yeah, like, yeah, I'm clouded up.
Trey did have it going. Mike Bruiser was actually just hit me like a week ago about that, about playing. I don't know if it was a Wisconsin team or what he has going on, but yeah, no. I'm My girlfriend's due August 10th, so I'll be in the UK for some of the summer. And yeah, nah.
Priorities, man. Priorities.
Yeah. Look, when the season's over, it's I play in the Twin Cities Pro-Am, kind of. Tyus Jones and Trey Jones. Oh, Tyus. I play on his team, and it's really cardio for me. I just kind of pass Tyus the ball, run up and down. So summer rec for me is a wrap.
Okay. So there's no salary we can give you that change your mind.
If there's a salary, yeah, of course. I mean, money.
Well, I'm talking if you win it. That is.
Yeah, that's not a salary. That's a prize. The salary
it's
is
true. Yeah. So, all right, fair enough. I tried my best. I tried my best. But yeah. So obviously, you mentioned you played with Sam Decker, or you're playing with Sam Decker. Played with him last year in this season. Just talk about what that's been like. I know you guys missed each other by a year when you were at Wisconsin, and just talk about how you're enjoying that. And do you think Sam is an NBA caliber player?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sam showed that he was, even in his 4 years, I think he showed flashes of being an NBA caliber player. I think, like we talked about the last time I was on the show, he had major injury too, a major back surgery. And it's to compete at the highest levels of basketball, especially now, it's tough when you get injured. And I always point people to LeBron when he had those back problems in 2016. You saw a pretty significant regression in his game. And then he disappeared for a couple weeks, went to Miami apparently, and came back healthy. But to play it if LeBron can't do that, if LeBron can't play injured, then, for guys like Sam or anybody, it's just difficult. But when Sam is healthy, he makes the game look easy. To me, I try and get on him because it's been fun for me to play with him. Sam's crazy, man. He cares so much about just people and basketball. He's one of the best people you'll meet. But he's also he's neurotic in this lovable way where it's he wants to win so bad, where he has his voice, it screeches. So when he snaps, it's almost like you just want to laugh, but he has so much passion in his game that he's an amazing teammate. He just, you don't find you in all my years playing, you don't really find a lot of teammates like Sam, who is that talented, that selfless, and cares that much, almost to a fault. But I always tell him there's things at 29, 30 that he still hasn't even tapped into. Sometimes he does things that makes it difficult on himself, and he still makes it look easy just from a tactical standpoint. So, playing with him has been fun, man. It's been a lot of fun. I know I get on his nerves because I'm always on him about little stuff too. But he's amazing. I could go on and on about that.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. And, well, let's move a little bit to some headlines in basketball right now. And before we talk some NIL, some Greg Gard, some Caitlin Clark, off of our last conversation, there's an opinion that I know that you're not going to agree with. So I just want you to react to this opinion. And my opinion is, and I've thought about this and strongly disagree with you, but I think Aaron Kraft is one of the best perimeter defenders I've ever seen in the sport of basketball. Now, I'm not just saying college. I'm saying in general. What's
in
your all response?
In basketball,
that I've seen in my 25 years of existence.
How old are you? 25? So what's that?
Soon to be 26.
1999? You were born 1998? Oh, man. Listen.
And I'm a basketball nut.
I don't know Aaron super well. With the times I've interacted with Aaron, he's a great dude.
Come on, Jordan. Let it fly.
One of the best perimeter defenders of all time. Like in basketball. Nah, you're bugging. You're bugged out. I don't know. I don't know what you're taking over there, but yeah, you're bugged out. He's a great defender. Aaron was a very intelligent defender. He's scrappy, plays hard,
plays the right way.
Yeah. He's a great player. Don't get it twisted. Don't get it twisted. He's on the all Big Ten decade team for a reason. But yeah, no. If you want my honest opinion, I thought Lewis Jackson was always looked over as a perimeter defender. Like for me, Lewis is small. He's smaller. He gets up under you. Pause. No ditty. Like he just tries. you know what I'm saying? He turns you. He makes it really. So I always had more problems with Lewis than with Aaron. But I think Aaron played on or not even say played, because Lewis played on some good teams. I you know what? I always wondered that Lewis was really looked over as a player. Like he did, he could have been. I thought he was more talented, honestly, and just he just played his role. Him and guys like Chris Kramer on those Purdue teams. I thought Kelsey for I always struggled with either really small guys or length, or not struggled, but those were the challenges. So Purdue alone was, you know, Lewis Jackson picking you up 94 feet, or Kelsey Barlow back in the day who's 6'5", with a 6'8", 6'9", wingspan. So those type of guys were, to me, the best perimeter defenders. But,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? We live 2024. I respect your opinion. You have the right to do what you want. You know what I'm saying?
So okay, all because you were like the one guy who ever scored a bucket on Aaron Kraft. Like, you're the one guy who ever had success. Never seen anyone else have success. But granted, he went 2-2 against you. It's not like you demolished him. My question
two
and two. For
2-2 what?
2-2.
Like, yeah, in college. 2-2, like, oh, record wise. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah. So it was 2-2. Yeah, you know, you had that legendary game at the Kohl Center. Yeah. Jordan, my question for you, who's a better defender, you or Aaron Kraft?
I mean, it's again, it's one of those things where you're going to say, if I gave all my energy, if I played with Jared Sullinger and John Diebler and William Buford, and then the next year, I forgot who was, all if I, you know, David Lighty, like, to me, David Lighty was the best defender on that team.
Wrong.
He could guard multiple positions. David Lighty could guard
Wrong.
The one, the two, the three, the four, sometimes the five. And he's 6'5", 6'6". So, yeah, if I could give my energy to all that, then, you know, I feel like I could play some pretty good defense. But, again, not taking nothing away from Aaron Kraft. That was his role, and he played it well. He played it really well. But –
yeah.
Could he do that and go score 18, 20 points? And I don't know. Maybe he could. Maybe he didn't get a chance to do that. I don't know.
No, that's why he didn't play in the NBA, is because he couldn't. He progressively became a worse shooter as his college career went on. Yeah, offensively in the league, they could have just sagged off of him. But, yeah, I have little doubt in my mind that he would have clamped up Steph, Damian Lillard.
Yeah, you drunk. He's trying to go viral. But no, I can't even say that's why he didn't play in the NBA, because I look at Aaron and I'm like, and then you see a guy like TJ McConnell who's doing work.
He can shoot a little bit more.
With TJ McConnell was shooting 15% from three at one point this year.
He's baked it in. Hasn't he shot well throughout his career? Has he shot well throughout his career? Well enough. Kraft shot 30% from three in college his senior year.
I don't know what TJ shot from three in college, but
yeah, I was stunned. I was stunned when McConnell made the NBA. I think that McConnell, Aaron Kraft walked so McConnell could run. All right, so
I think TJ is a little more crafty.
Pun intended.
Offensively. I guess this year, okay, I lied. TJ,
I'd agree with that.
40% this year on 0.6 attempts. But, you know, yeah, there is a stretch where he wasn't shooting.
You just fact-checked yourself in real time.
I did just fact. Got to. I'm a big, people will tell you, I like to Google. I'm not just going to throw things out and just be dead wrong. And if I don't know, then I'll say I don't know. So, you know, I'm opinionated, but I like to come with facts, you know. Not, you know, we live in an age where people just kind of say whatever. So I like to have some facts.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, no. I mean, like, I'll never say I was never stunned that TJ McConnell made the NBA. I wouldn't have been stunned if Aaron Kraft made the NBA. To me, when you look at the NBA is driven by LeBron James, you know, Kevin Durant, Anthony, those guys drive the NBA, and those are who people want. Luka Doncic, those are people who want. Who, if you took TJ McConnell out of the NBA right now and put Aaron Kraft in there, no one would know the difference. Like, no one would pay attention to it. Like, people, it would just be a different player. Like, and that's not a, you know, an insult to TJ. That's just a fact of the matter. Like, if you took, I can't even think who's in the playoffs right now. Monte Morris is a really good player. Take Monte Morris out and put Matt Morgan from my team right now. People wouldn't know the difference. So it would just be a
lot
different
of talent
player
out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
no doubt. I'll move on to the next topic. I'll move on to the next topic here, but I just want to I do want to throw out there, you know what, I'll get the last word here. Two-time Big Ten Player of the Year. On your podcast, Greg Gard,
defensive player of the year.
Defensive player of the year, pardon me. Yeah. On your podcast, you asked Greg Gard who was the best defender he's seen in college basketball. You know what his answer was? Aaron Kraft. And yeah, he's the Big Ten's all-time steals leader. And his rookie year was the G League Defensive Player of the Year, and he's, you know, won steals and defensive players of the year awards overseas, but, like, you know, it's neither here or there. So
what award did he win overseas?
I don't know. I can't actually have overseas expert, but he won. Yeah, fine. We'll look this up.
Do you think Rudy Gobert is the best defensive player in NBA history?
No, I'm just saying, you know, I'm not the only one who's thinking this. LBA best defender in 19, LBA or LNB Pro A best defender in 2018. You know,
LNB Pro A.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but two times LBA steals leader. So, I mean, it is what it is. We'll let the people decide, you know.
I didn't even know. I played in the French League, which is the LNB. Honestly, I didn't even know that was an award. I didn't know they gave that out. No clue. But yeah. No, listen, Aaron is a great defender. Don't get it twisted. LBA. I've never heard of this award. That's wild. But yeah, no, good defender. Best defender ever, like at all of basketball.
No, he's not the best defender of all time. I'm saying one of the best perimeter defenders I've witnessed. That was my statement.
One of. All right. Jaden McDaniels, where is he ranked?
Honestly, I don't even know who that is.
See. Jaden McDaniels with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Is he a newer guy? I don't really watch the NBA. I'm not going to lie.
He's 20, but probably, you know, Jaden McDaniels, probably one of the best defenders. Anthony Edwards is a really good defender, to be honest.
The NBA ratings have fallen off a cliff ever since Devin Harris retired. So, I'm one of those guys. I'll admit, you know, ever since Devin didn't play in 1920, you see the ratings falling. I'm one of those guys, so I can't act like I know a lot about the current NBA. But I used to follow it quite a bit. So,
No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
But so pivoting to the next topic, combination of NIL, the transfer portal, you know, the freedom of movement. Are you a fan?
Yeah, I mean, of course, why not? Like it's turning. I'm a fan that players get an option to capitalize off of what they're good at. And you're still D1 basketball players are still amongst the very few, percentage wise, like not a lot of people can do, you know, not a lot of people can be a D1 All American, not a lot of people can be, all conference player. And Chucky Hepburn's a better perimeter defender than Aaron Kraft to me when I watch, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. So it's Chucky's tough.
But he ain't no Aaron Kraft.
Shoot, Chucky. Either way, but I think it's cool to see that. I think there's pros and cons to everything. So I'm not just uniform black and white. It's a nuanced topic. Like it's great to see players be able to capitalize that because oftentimes I look at myself, for example, I was an All-American twice, second team, an honorable mention, and I just think about the money that I could have made based on just relative to what these guys are making. And that's a lot of money to put in your pocket as a 22-year-old. Changes your decision-making process. It really could change. I mean, depending on who's around you and what you do with it, it could change the path of your life. Where oftentimes it's like, all right, you gotta, you know, if you don't make it to the NBA, back when I was coming out, then you go, the G League was paying $20,000, where now it's paying $700 for a two-way. So yeah, I'm a fan of that. I'm a fan that there's that opportunity for players to capitalize on their talents. On the other side of it, there's the negatives are, I think, you know, the old adage or the old cliche is that money kind of ruins everything. And I think there is some bad habits that come along with the amount of money that's in basketball now. Like, how do you, in the NBA specifically or in college now, how do you tell a kid who's averaging 9 points a game or even, let's say, 15 points a game and is on a bad team, and some team's going to look at his 15 a game and they're going to come next year and say, hey, we want you on our team for $750,000. Why? What? Does winning even matter? Like, who cares? Like, I'm going to go get paid. Like, you're not going to. And how, as a coach or a teammate or whatever, you can't even really hate on that, because at the end of the day, most people do things for money. Money is always a huge motivating factor. And if anybody that says it's not is full of shit. So it's, yeah. So how do you sit here and tell someone, like, hey, you know, don't do this, but doing that, because it's not a winning habit, but doing that is going to get them paid and help them change their life. It's so, I'm a fan, but I also recognize the cons to it. And it's a challenge for coaches to adapt to this new landscape, which is why I think you saw someone like Nick Saban retire.
Yeah. And yeah, you know what? Let the players make money. You know, the universities, NCAA made a lot of money over a lot of players over many years. Let the players make money. I don't have a problem with that. It's structure, right? You just need a little structure to it. In the NBA, you get drafted, you hit restricted free agency, you have contracts. Like, for me, the fact that, you know, say Greg Gard or whatever coach in the handshake line has to worry what the other coach is going to say to their top guys, like, you know what, you're, whoever it is, you know, the other coach can say, hey, I got this and I got that in a starting spot for you. Like, that's just wrong. And I think the portal for me personally is ruining college basketball. I would be fine with a one-time exception for a transfer, or you have to sit out. Like, we live in a world where everything's instant gratification. We don't want to wait for something good to happen. It's always now. So my ideal world would be to bring back the redshirt rule, but that's never going to happen. I would adjust it a little bit, where I would say, okay, if your coach leaves, yeah, you can transfer right away. Graduate, obviously, you can transfer. I'd add a few more exceptions than there were, but the poaching is a real problem. So if you want to poach a kid, okay, now you have to pay him for the year he's sitting out, and you can have him play for you a year. So that'd be my idealistic. We had the redshirt rule forever, and we all survived, and it actually paid off for a lot of guys, but I understand that's not possible. So at the very least, we got to have them sign contracts, which I don't love, but just this, it's AAU now, where after every single season, you just go to the highest bidder. Like, trust me, I want everyone to get paid. I want you to get paid. I want all your friends to get paid, my friends, everybody. I want the college kids to get paid, but there has to be some structure. And yeah, just it turning to AAU, like Jordan, like if you know, like you would have made a ton of money. Like you, like there's a good chance after your junior year, you're probably not finishing at Wisconsin. You would have had Duke, Kentucky. You would have had the Blue Bloods offering you $1 million. You know, like having your starting point guard like Chucky, you know, just, and I don't blame him at all for taking it. You got to take it, you know, but, you know, just having like your 3 year starting point guard, just, you know, go to the highest bidder. It's ruining college athletics. In my opinion, there's just gotta be some guardrails.
I mean, yeah, it's ruining it as we know it. Who knows what's on the other side of all this. I say like poaching is wrong. I don't look at it in terms of like black and white, right and wrong, but poaching is wrong. Poaching's wrong for who? Because Chucky didn't enter the portal. So Chucky just got a problem solved for him an opportunity presented to him that he didn't even know existed, that he wouldn't have known existed if it weren't for people being able to poach. Like, Chucky wasn't even in the portal. Chucky entered the, well, I don't know this to be true, but I know Chucky wasn't in the portal, and I know he was at school, and then he randomly, in the middle of spring workouts or whatever they have, entered the portal. So that tells me that someone came to him and was like, oh, I got this money for you. And the money was so much that I can't say no. So, yeah. So who's that bad for? That's bad for the Wisconsin coaching staff. I mean, it's not bad for Chucky. You know what I'm saying?
Here's what I'll say. College basketball, not to cut you off, but I'm calling it right now. College basketball ratings is going to, I think it's going to be bad for college basketball ratings. So that's my prediction. when you're rooting for an AAU team each year. That's a little different than when you root for Jordan Taylor and Rob Wilson, who have been there for 4 years. That's my prediction. But sorry, keep going.
No. That's a very valid point. But I think it's for the people that are the losers on that side. Yeah, they're not going to watch. But for the teams that are going to win, for the Baylors who got Jeremy Roach coming in for whatever they paid him, for the Louisvilles, like the ratings in those conferences aren't going to go down. Like they're still going to watch the ratings in the tournament. I would assume people are still going to bet on the tournament. People are still going to, people are still going to do all that. It's still going to, there's going to be upsets. There's going to be excitement in the tournament. So you might very well be right, but I don't think that, I don't know. I don't think that I don't think the ratings are necessarily going to plummet. At least not initially. Cause I think there's still a lot of interest in what's going on. It's who knows if Wisconsin comes out and Daniel Freetag is killing next year, then people you're going to watch, right? You ain't going to not watch Daniel Freetag.
I'll be watching.
Yeah. If Daniel Freetag and Nolan Winter have Wisconsin in the Big Ten title hunt, then people are going to tune in. So if your team's winning, then you're going to watch. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah. I just anecdotally, I know people who I've been talking to are just, big college fans, and all a lot of them are saying their passion level has, like they were just kind of like indifferent at Chucky leaving. Like it sucks to have him leave, but they were just like, I'm not like they were just kind of numb, and where it's just like they didn't care all that much. So that's just seeing people who I'm talking to, just in my life, a lot of people are kind of feeling that way. So I'll be interested to see if that, that sample size, it represents more people. We'll see. But sources tell Sports Chat with Matt that Chucky Hepburn was making roughly $800,000 at Louisville. Jordan, how much do you think you could have made? And let's not account for inflation. Let's talk 2024 dollars, not 2012. Not $2012 dollars. Let's use $2024 dollars. Jordan, what would your market price be?
I'm just looking at the other guys. Like, I'm looking at Jeremy Roach. I don't was Jeremy Roach All American this year?
I don't know. I probably all ACC. Like, yeah, 14 a game.
Duke kid. Like, I would assume, I just based on some of the numbers I see, I'd somewhere in that 1.5 area.
Yeah.
After I would assume just seeing the numbers, unless someone just thought that it was a fluke or whatever, I don't know. But it was, just based on what everybody else is getting, somewhere in that 1.5 million area for sure.
Do you cringe as that comes out of your mouth? Does that make you cringe a little bit?
I mean, nah, I don't, it doesn't make me cringe, because it is what it is. I've had a good career overseas. I've made some money overseas, but, It's a lot of cheese. It's a lot of chicken. I don't know if I would have a couple years of that. I don't know if I would. I definitely would have been rushing back from my hip surgery or my hip and ankles issues going into my senior year. I probably might have even taken a medical redshirt and said, "Yo, let me get that second year up off you." So
that's an interesting point. Yeah.
So I might have turned that 2 into 3 years. And then, if you're making a million or whatever it is, hypothetically speaking, of course, if you're making a million, 1.5 for 3 years, you made $3 to $4.5 million in 3 years, and you got that at 23. I don't know that I would have came overseas. Maybe I would have. Maybe, who knows? I might have just taken a bigger swing at NBA, training camps and things like that for a couple of years, as opposed to just one or two. Who knows? But yeah, definitely up in that range based on performance.
Yeah, I totally agree. And yeah, no, you would have had Calipari and Duke and everybody. They would have been knocking, man. They would have been knocking. But yeah, guard's been extended to 2029. Yeah. What do you think of that?
I think that it's, Coach Guard is a anybody that says Coach Guard is not a great coach is remedial to me. He's a great basketball coach. Now, are there challenges and growing pains that you're going to see at Wisconsin? through this NIL phase. Yeah, but when you break it down, I don't like it's very obvious the checks. So some of that's not on coaching. Recruiting isn't recruiting anymore. So people that say, I've seen, you know, blogs, you hear people say, oh, they don't want to play for Coach Gard. Jeremy Roach just left the Duke Blue Devils, and John Shire, one of the most storied programs in college basketball history, to go to Baylor. So, like, what are we talking about? It's people need to examine the power of the dollar. And like, it's just that simple. Like, it's nothing else. It has nothing to do with, you know, making. And I'm a big advocate. Joe and Coach Gard, I will go up in the office and I like, oh, we need this. I said, we need a five man. We need, you know, who's going to rock the rim, and we need to get up and down. But like, that doesn't change or fix that. None of that stuff would have kept Chucky Hepburn in Wisconsin. The only thing that would keep Chucky Hepburn in Wisconsin is matching that so-called 800 that he got from Louisville. And unless, you know, the people that are complaining, or, you know, someone's going to step up and put the bread up for, you know, 800,000, then to me, like, shut up. Like, you gonna put it to, and someone put it to me this way. I'm a big Minnesota Vikings fan, and one of my friends, they put it to me this way. Like, I love Justin Jefferson. Who you cheer for the NFL?
I would say the Packers.
The Packers, yeah. Right? All right. So you love Jordan Love, I'm sure, right now. You're probably a Jordan Love guy.
Yeah, I like Jordan.
Let's say the Packers came to you and said, hey, we need, you know, $1 million to keep Jordan Love in Green Bay. How much you gonna give?
Nothing.
Nothing. I wouldn't give a cent to keep Justin Jefferson with the Minnesota Vikings. And I love, yeah. So I wouldn't give not a dollar. So shout out to the people that are giving this money. I think it's great. To me, that's what's going to ruin college. It's turning into like almost like a dick swing contest amongst boosters and donors. Who, like, that's kind of what it, to me, that's what
they don't
being
work
rude.
They don't work, that's the
and that's what it looks like. I'm not saying that's the case, I'm just saying that's what it looks like. It's like, all right, I got like John Calipari is going to Arkansas. I'm assuming it's the guy like Walmart or Tyson Chicken is giving them a crazy budget to spend money. It's like, what are we talking about here? Yeah, like, what are you? And with all due respect to these players, like, if someone would have given me $1.5 million to play basketball as a junior, and you look in the NBA at that time, or even now, I think the minimum salary in the NBA is $1 million or maybe something like that. Like, was I worth $1 million? Probably not. Maybe, I don't know. Who knows? But you're worth what someone's willing to pay, I guess. And, you know, it's these guys that are willing to spend the money. So, shit. It is what it is.
So a few thoughts is, one is, Gard has a lot of capital that's been freed up after Store left, after Chucky left. So I won't be surprised if they land someone who people don't expect. Like, they have a lot of funds that are now cleared up, and it actually they might be better next year than they were this year. But I'm going to disagree with you right now. I know you're a Wisconsin guy. You have a relationship with Greg. I great coach. I would say great X and O's coach, but Gard has two problems, in my opinion, where one, I think his players play a little too tense, a little too tight. They don't flow enough. I see fear. I see a fear-driven environment. That's my outsider perspective. And the limited things I've heard is that players aren't flowing. They're not playing confident. And the last thing you want to do as a basketball player is be afraid to make a mistake. Then you make more mistakes. And then number two is just charisma. And I'm not trying to get you to say anything about Gard. I'm just saying, I'm going to disagree on great. I think good coach. Where I like Gard, and I want to see him do well, because he seems like a solid human being. And I think X and O's, he's really good. But yeah, I think the charisma, and I think his players play with a little bit too much fear. I think the seat's a little bit toasty, but I would not be surprised if Wisconsin makes a big splash in this portal. And yeah, like you said, cash is king, and I like this. I don't know if you saw this, but they're bringing in a 6-year senior from like Morehead State, who's a point guard coming in for a visit. Like, I think that's exactly what you need in college basketball. It's like age is king. Like, it's all like Like we saw with Kentucky versus Oakland. Oakland had a bunch of old dudes who took down Kentucky, the one and done, the young guys doesn't really work. So yeah, I think age is king. And we'll see. I think the seat is toasty. I guess the question I'll ask you is how do you think Gard's going to respond this upcoming year? Do you think they'll make a splash? And how do you think the team and Gard will respond with his back against the wall?
I don't know if he feels like his back's against the wall, but yeah, I think they'll get somebody. I think, again, Daniel Freetag is from where I'm from. So I think Daniel Freetag, Nolan Winter, Max Klesmet, Stephen Crow, like, I think you lost a lot. I don't think you lost as much as you think you did. Like, to your point, you're still just a couple of transfers away from kind of.
Oh, yeah. Add a point guard, or maybe just keep Freetag or a power forward. Like,
yeah, add Tyler Wall as well. But, you know, so you know, you're a couple guys away from kind of filling the holes. AJ Storr, as great as he was this year, like, let me ask you this. Who I think Gard will respond fine to answer your question, because I don't think he feels like his back's against the wall. But who do you think played tense or with fear?
I would say just about everybody from January, like, what was it? Everyone from February, everyone on the team starting in February, where they were shooting like a combined 25% from three.
And you think that was from fear?
Yes.
And what was driving that fear? You're saying Coach Gard was driving that fear?
Yes.
How so?
I'm not backing down from this.
No, no, I'm just asking, how so?
Iron fist.
Coach Gard, Iron Fist?
Yes.
Okay.
And
Iron Fist. Well,
he's pulling AJ Storr. Like AJ Storr has to consistently look over his shoulder and see Gard ready to yank him out. You have Gard, I never see him smile on the sideline, and I don't like ripping him. I don't like ripping him to a guy who's friends with him.
No,
Greg Gard.
Is my guy, you can't. But I'm,
I know. I'm sorry, Jordan. Reproach.
Nobody's above reproach, though. So, but Coach Gard is my guy, but nobody's above reproach.
Yeah, I don't like ripping him to you, but when the whole team was shooting 25%, I don't see guards like. It never looks. I know college basketball, you know, it's serious business, but it's also a game. Like, basketball is a game. I don't see him ever having fun. The only emotion I ever see him on the sideline, like, he'll complain about a call here and there, but it's usually someone turns the ball over and he's just stomping his foot on the ground and getting rather upset. Like, I that's my opinion from an outsider perspective with limited things that I've heard. I'm not going to act like I'm Stephen A. Smith and I'm uber connected within the program, but the little things that I've heard is it can be kind of you're looking over the shoulder. I don't think he instills enough confidence. I don't think he's handing the ball to Jordan Taylor with 7 seconds left in the shot clock and saying, "All right, you go do your thing." I'm just kidding.
So you thought that Coach Ryan instilled more
confidence? No. Don't just take the last thing I said.
I'm just asking because you're implying that Coach Ryan didn't rule with an iron fist.
No, Bo definitely did. And I think Gard's got to stop looking up to Bo so much and be his own coach. And I think he is very similar to Bo. I don't think Bo would be as good in today's era as he was back in your era. But this of Bob Knight, Bo Ryan, and the grid guard, I just think it's a little little too much. I just think he's got to let loose. And I think he's tried. Like when I saw him like in 2022 in the interview with his arm around Johnny Davis and you know, stuff like that. I think he's tried, you know, like I heard that he went golfing with Brad Davison and Chris Vogt. Like he's tried drawing connections with his players. But I think he's just got to do a better job of instilling confidence within his players. And yes, Bo 1000% ruled with an iron fist. Yes.
So I think the only guy that didn't have confidence on this team and had maybe their confidence taken was Connor Assisian. And I think that was maybe because he couldn't guard anybody. And I think that's always going to be the staple of, you know, Wisconsin basketball. As long as Coach Ryan's there, if you can't guard, you can't play. So I think that that's the only person. AJ Storr played from January on, went 31 minutes. 20 minutes, 29, 28, 34, 24, 32, 33, 35, 29, 31, 29, 36, 37,
28. Are we talking minutes here?
We're talking, these are just minutes. Now, if you want to go shot attempts in all those games, we're talking about 13, 8, 15, 11, 17, 8, 14, 17, 22, 15, 14, 16, 9, 18, 13, 13, 12, 15, 15, 11, 16, 23, 20, 14. So if you're telling me that AJ Storr was looking over his shoulder and some of the shots he took were pretty bullshit shots, and I like AJ Storr. I thought he was a good player, but there was also, he went at one point, took, I think around 80. I'd have to go back to our podcast. Me and Josh talked about this. I think he took somewhere around 70 to 80 shot attempts and had one assist. I can't recall one player in Wisconsin basketball history who's been given the type of freedom that AJ Storr was given.
Oh, I agree. No, I agree. I agree. But I'm saying that's like kind of a just a layer. Yes, it didn't phase Storr. Did it phase Storr? No, it didn't phase Storr. But I would say the whole unit did not seem confident from when, I'm countering, you know, you're pulling up your statistics. I'll counter with my statistics
please,
here.
Please.
All right. From February 1st to March 10th, Wisconsin shot a whopping 30.1% from three. In 11 Big Ten games, 30%, bunch of Division I guys who are missing wide open looks. Granted, they got hot in the Big Ten tournament. That changed things quite a bit. They finished from February to the end of March shooting 33%, which isn't awful, not great, but not awful. But just watching those games, that Rutgers game, I just see tense guys. I see tight. I see guys who aren't flowing. Maybe they're just not as talented as I think they are, because they missed a lot of open shots. They missed a lot of open shots. And I think
their offense didn't produce a lot of open shots. They took a lot of tough, tough shots throughout the course of the Big Ten season, particularly AJ Storr. Chucky wasn't as aggressive as I would like, but if Chucky's not aggressive, who's their shot creator?
I'm saying
who is creating these good looks?
I'm saying catch and
shoot. Yeah, but who is creating these great catch and shoot looks?
I would say kicking it into the post and kicking it back out to the shooter. That's what I would say. So Wall and Crowell.
So that's a form of what? System?
Yeah.
So what basketball player would be worried about missing a wide open in this day and age? Because these are the same guys who come down early in transition. Max Klesmit, throw it ahead. If you're open, shoot it. That has never been a Wisconsin basketball thing up until, I'd argue, maybe the Final Four runs. They did that a little bit, but that has never really been a consistent thing up until Coach Gard became the coach. That was a thing.
See, if we keep going here, I might not get you back on the show.
Listen, I always come back. But what Coach Gard, you're saying he's changed the offense entirely.
So let's go back a few years. In another year where I thought the locker room didn't feel together. Well, obviously it wasn't together, but let's go back to that 2020-2021 team and other teams as well. We've seen so many scoring droughts in the Greg Gard era where teams don't, and I don't see this from other high major Division I teams, where they can't put the ball in the hoop for 6 minutes. And that's happened consistently. And it's either they're not as talented as I think they are. Maybe it's a little bit of both. Maybe they're not as talented. what? Did he just do a thumbs up? Was that you?
I didn't. That wasn't me, but I was just nodding my head. I don't know if he automatically did that.
Yeah, I have no idea what that was. But so maybe it's a combination. They're not as talented as I thought, or I think Greg Gard doesn't instill enough confidence in his players. Maybe it's a combination. I will say that, like Storr, there's not enough easy buckets that come from Wisconsin, as in like guys being able to create for themselves and score easily. But yeah, so I think it's one of those two things, maybe a blend of both. That's my hypothesis.
This team is having one of the better offensive seasons that in Wisconsin basketball history up until that Nebraska game.
Yeah, so, why were they so rattled?
So they had a second half collapse in the Nebraska game. And from that point on, they struggled to create good shots. They struggled to take good shots. They struggled with decision making, and so on and so forth. So what are we saying happened from that point, they had confidence, and then all of a sudden, Coach Gar just snatched that away from them?
I'm saying that everything is great when you're winning, and they were winning. And I thought this team looked different. They looked like a different team than we've ever seen under Greg Gar, but everything, you know, is wonderful when you're winning ball games. But then a little controversy, a little, you know, shit hits the fan a little bit, and they got rattled. And I didn't see them getting back on track. It took them a long time. It took them until the Big Ten tournament. But ultimately, they regressed to the team they were February to March in the NCAA tournament. They looked unprepared in that NCAA tournament.
For me, they look like they were, and I'll use your word, they look like, I don't like to say soft or scared, but they look scared in the NCAA tournament. Again, how do you go on a Big Ten run? So you're insinuating, not saying you're saying, but you're insinuating that Coach Gard gave them confidence in the Big Ten tournament and then took it the week before the NCAA tournament.
I my guess would be that was internal thing, like the players together overcame the coaching staff. That's what I think. They were saying, "F it, well, let's just go out and let's just do our thing. Let's just hoop." I think that was internal. And I will say, I know a little bit. I've heard a little bit. That's all I'll say. I'm not gonna say here, but I heard a little bit.
Okay.
Man, as connected as I am, I got well placed moles at the. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Look, I mean, again, to me, the change happened when Steven Crowell kind of stopped looking at the basket. Him and Chucky were not aggressive at all. And anybody that watches Wisconsin, the offense has changed, but one thing that stays consistent is shot creation typically comes from either inside out or it comes from a point guard who creates shots. So, scores and create shots. And I think during that stretch, Steven Crowell, they did a really good job. I was there in the summer. They did a really good job at implementing a new offense, which is kind of a five out. You play side to side offense where the five man looks at the basket. And at some point it turned into a version of what happened when we ran the swing, when it became stagnant. And instead of exploring every option, guys weren't looking at the basket. They were playing side to side. But they weren't really being aggressive. It was just going side to side, and then it would get late clock and you end up with AJ pressing or someone taking maybe a forced shot. To me, when that happens for a 19, 20, 21 year old, I don't think that they had, I think Chucky did it at the end of the season. In past years, you have a guy who's always comfortable taking those shots. When things get tight, you have a guy comfortable taking those shots. AJ was comfortable taking those shots. AJ was not very efficient. So the problem is when you're not efficient and you're going to take it upon yourself to take those shots, well, now you're going to start losing games. Maybe you get a little tight. Maybe other guys get tight. Whatever someone would say, I would probably vehemently disagree that Coach Gard was, you know, taking guys confidence, and even if he was being hard on people, there's a certain level of confidence that some players have. You either realize that one, yeah, you might get taken out, but who is he taking them out for, and who is AJ Storr getting pulled by? Who is he putting in the game?
Okay, I'll tell you, I was at the Wisconsin Illinois game, and yeah. I saw Chucky Hepburn, Storr got pulled, and then guess what happens? They go right after a siege, and they get fouled, I think, once or twice, and Chucky literally waved a guard to put AJ Storr back in the game. And yeah. Chucky looked right. Like he was reaching his tipping point with that. And Wall, yes, and now you're jarring my memory. Tyler Wall, and I think in that Illinois game, key moment of the game, fifth year senior, he's been around the block. He knows when he makes a mistake. I don't think you have to be pulling guys I think Tyler Wall, okay, I made a bad pass. I chucked it out of bounds. You don't need to pull the guy because Tyler Wall Right when they took him out, I think Illinois went on a 6-0 run in a key part of the game. Yeah, like pulling in freshman Nolan Winter is going to solve your problems in a tight game against Illinois and taking out Tyler Wahl. That's the move. That might have been the most egregious thing I saw the whole season. And the last thing I'll say, because I don't want to be putting you on blast having to defend your guy, your good friend Greg Gard, but
listen, I'm going to call it like a basketball player. 2021.
We saw those tapes come out. And they said exactly kind of what I'm saying about the lack of relationship, and they were playing too tight. They felt like he didn't believe in them, whatever. And what I'm saying is I feel like Gard tried his best to change, but ultimately he is who he is. And this past season, that's my hypothesis as to why they looked so terrible in February and March was, yeah, well, we can agree to disagree, but I think that things did not change from 2021.
Tyler Wahl is a fifth-year senior that you're talking about shouldn't have been taken out, and you think it was because of a bad pass. But Tyler Wahl,
it was a bad pass
tournament. Yeah, okay. But Tyler Wahl in the conference tournament was 1-for-5, 0-for-1, 2-for-9, 1-for-5, and 2-for-3. He was awful, and Tyler will tell you he was awful. So it was not because of the one bad pass. It was because Tyler was awful. Tyler was
hooping that game against Illinois. Tyler was hooping. He had 20 points. Look it up. Yeah, you have Tyler's
tournament
page.
Game? Are you talking about the conference tournament game?
This is regular season.
The last game of the regular season when he was like 7-for-10 or whatever it was.
Okay, so Tyler Wahl had what I believe he had a knee injury and he played terrible, and I feel really bad for him because a lot of time fans, and this happened to Trayvon Jackson, a lot of time fans will only remember what you did for them last. Tyler Wahl on the whole season actually had a very good season. Tyler Wahl, I would say throughout the whole year, up until the Big Ten tournament, up until the NCAA tournament, outside of that, I thought he was their most consistent player, their most trustworthy player. And I would make the argument, you could make the argument, that he was their best player. I will say that. But yeah, he was terrible in the Big Ten tournament. But Gard, in that Illinois game, when Tyler Wahl was putting the ball in the hoop. Granted, he was struggling. Dolmask was torching him. But Wahl was putting the ball in the hoop. He makes a bad pass. Gard pulls him. In comes freshman Nolan Winter, who is going to solve all life's problems. And Illinois goes on a 6-0 run.
So you're saying Tyler Wahl had his confidence taken from him?
No, collective group.
Everybody didn't have that. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. Everybody didn't have their confidence taken from them.
How it worked in 2021, though.
No, it isn't. You had a couple of guys who felt like who didn't really vibe with Coach Gard, and then you had someone record the situation, make it look probably even worse than it was, but it was not the collective group. It was not the collective group. Like, I've never been on a team where everybody got their confidence taken.
That team was very senior heavy, and every senior was in that meeting. I think, let's go. They started Trice, Davison, Aleem Ford, Reavers, and Potter were starting a little bit here and there. So they were kind of alternating. They started together for a little bit, and then Wahl entered the starting lineup. But so just about the whole starting lineup was there, and it was a senior and coach meeting. And then then they referenced other players. You know, I would never do this. I felt terrible. I felt terrible for those guys. They're like, yeah, this player thinks the exact same way. I'm like, dude, you just throw that guy under the bus. Don't be saying that to Coach Gard. But, you know what, Jordan? I feel like we should agree to disagree, but I'll leave you with the final word on this topic before we pivot to our last topic.
I just being in the locker room, I think most guys will tell you I've had guys who had their confidence taken as well. And there are guys who can overcome that. And there are guys who can't. Like, I don't think I've known Coach Gard for a long time, played for Coach Ryan, played for several coaches. And you know, you're hard on certain guys. Some guys are coached differently. The one thing that can really take a guy's confidence is sitting them on the bench and not playing them. Guys who get to play 30 minutes and you get your confidence taken. Most players, I would say, would never probably put that on the coach. That's an internal struggle that you have that you got to figure out. Now, I can, again, a guy like Rob Wilson, who literally just didn't get to play. Super talented guy. Guy like Connor Season didn't get to play. Very talented offensively. That I could see where you get in there and you press. When you're playing 30 minutes a game, like, why is you're playing? What's going to happen to you? You're going to get taken out for 2 minutes? So if someone can, if you allow someone to take your confidence when they're playing you, like, that's your nod of approval. You're playing 30 minutes a game. Why is your confidence gone? That's on you. Duye Dukan's another great example. Someone who didn't get to play a lot, played behind Sam Decker. When Duye got in the game late in his career, he would come in and he made big shots. And I've always saluted Duye for that. Like, he big shot in Final Fours, things like that. But yeah, if you're playing 30 minutes a game and someone's going to sit here and tell me, oh, he's taking my confidence away. How? You're allowed to shoot whatever shot you want. He takes you out. If you take a dumbass shot, yeah, come sit down, because that's not how you win games, and you're going to go right back in. But if you're playing 30 minutes a game, I don't know how your confidence is getting taken. That's not really fathomable to me.
Sure. But yeah, so Jordan, great debate, great discussion. The last topic I got is a little women's basketball. Obviously, Caitlin Clark, she's a comet. She's a superstar. Is she the GOAT of women's basketball already?
No, hell no. Not even close. That's that, to me, that's a disrespectful question to even ask. How you, like, we can't, unless we're changing, unless we're changing the criteria for what GOAT is, like, no, you can't be a GOAT and not have championships. She's amazing, though. Like, amazing to watch. Probably, if you're talking about just the most electric women's basketball player, that probably she's a catalyst for women's basketball. I would say similar to how, you know, like Magic and MJ from I Wasn't Alive, but just going back and reading and hearing, like, I believe she can be a catalyst for women's basketball in the way that, like, MJ was, just because she's so tantalizing and exciting. But GOAT, no, like, what are we talking about? Like, no, how the GOAT of women's basketball, she hasn't even stepped on the floor in the WNBA. She won no championships. Brianna Stewart was a four-time champion, a four-time MOP. Like, hell no. What are we talking about?
You want me to explain?
Yeah, you can. I've heard your explanation, but you can explain.
Wait, what was my explanation?
I know what it's going to be, but I know it is. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Who's your GOAT, MJ or LeBron?
Oh, man. I don't even like this conversation. I'm born in 1989. I grew up watching. I was 13, 14, watching LeBron in Sacramento first game, and I was like 9 watching LeBron watching MJ in Utah. So it's LeBron, and the reasons for that are just a simple fact that I grew up in LeBron's era. If you say MJ, I'm not going to argue with you. They're both champions. They're both the best players of their era, and you know it is what that's where I leave it.
I guess maybe GOAT could be misleading, but where I'm going with this is, so the ratings when Michael Jordan was in the NBA Finals in 1998 was 35 million. It has if you just look at the graph over the years in the LeBron James era, ratings, he's never outrated MJ ever. He never outrated MJ ever. And the ratings are really bad now. And what I'm saying about Caitlin Clark, maybe not is she the most decorated, so therefore she's the GOAT? No. What I'm saying is the fact that she has transcended the sport, where I'll be the first to admit I have not watched any WNBA basketball ever. I'm going to watch WNBA basketball next year. I've never watched women's college basketball ever. I watched it. Because of her, I know probably 10, 15, I'm not saying, look at me, I know so many, but I probably know 10 women's basketball players because I know who she is. So I'm saying by captivating the sport in the way that she is and bringing eyeballs to the sport, that in that sense, that's where I'm saying the GOAT, just because she's transcended it, like Michael Jordan, like Tiger Woods, like that's what she's doing right now with women's basketball. So that's what I look at Tiger Woods as the GOAT. I look at MJ, and I have to give a nod to Larry Bird and Magic Johnson as well. They were massive. But I'm just talking about captivating, transcending the sport, that alone, like you have, if there's obviously been a lot of great WNBA players over the years, but no one's transcended the sport anything like Caitlin Clark. So that's where I'm going by calling her the GOAT. The fact that I want to go get a Caitlin Clark jersey. Like I love her. Like, it sucks that she's dating Connor McCaffrey. That guy's a douchebag. One of my least favorite college basketball players of all time. But man, I love Caitlin. She's so fun to watch. And I had a blast watching the other teams as well in the tournament, but I wouldn't know who all these other people are if it weren't for her. And the WNBA has a chance to, you know, become a viable business, just talking numbers, potentially because of Caitlin Clark. So that's where I'm going with, could she be the GOAT? I'm just saying, transcending sports, like a Michael Jordan, like a Tiger Woods.
That's I hear you. I think that's super disingenuous to people who have followed the sport. I think it's I think there's a book called Outliers that kind of talks about Michael Jordan and how someone, the timing of the NBA, the timing of Nike, it was going to be somebody, and Mike stepped into those shoes. It doesn't take away from Mike's greatness. It doesn't take away from what he did, but it was also primed for that to happen. The timing, there's more. It's more that goes into that stuff. Like, you're talking about ratings. There's more that goes into it than just Michael Jordan. The ratings weren't high just because of Michael Jordan. He played a big role in that. But the NBA, like the WNBA in the 80s, 70s, 80s, was a questionable business. It had questionable ratings. There was an influx of money that came into it. There was an influx of stars that came into it. There was an influx of marketing dollars that came into it. Then you had a company like Nike that was a startup. And if Magic Johnson would have taken that Nike deal, like, you know, is teased in the movie, in the book, and Shoe Dog, things like that, maybe it's Magic Johnson who becomes the ratings king. Maybe they. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is, I'm not going to say just because you push the sport forward, that doesn't make you the GOAT. That makes you a catalyst. It makes you extremely important. And obviously, Caitlin Clark is going to do that. Someone like myself, I watched women's college basketball since I was a kid. I was a Diana Taurasi fan. I dated a girl who played in the WNBA. I was in the WNBA bubble. So to see people like Shamika Holzclaw, Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird, Maya Moore, et cetera, et cetera. And then to call someone else the GOAT of that sport just because she started making everybody watch it when this, I guess, thunderstorm or lightning storm that is the becoming women's basketball didn't just start yesterday with Caitlin Clark. It's kind of climaxing now. She's taking it and she's riding the wave and she's taking the wave higher. But this has been, the ratings in the WNBA have been growing and growing and growing and growing because the interest and the money that have been put into it has been growing and growing and growing and growing, in part because of people like Kelsey Plum, because of Maya Moore, because of Breanna Stewart, because of Asia Wilson. So to say she's the GOAT is crazy.
I was a question.
To say, no, yeah. No, I didn't say, I'm saying, but to say she's the GOAT is crazy to me. Like, that shouldn't even be a conversation. But to acknowledge her, how great she is and how exciting she is, yeah, that's a no-brainer. It's not a question. She could take the WNBA to new heights for sure. Like, but could she also, like, who knows? We'll see what she does. And we'll see. It's going to be, I've always thought it was going to be interesting because if she doesn't succeed the way in the WNBA, the way that, you know, people expect her to, I wonder what that will do to the WNBA at the same time.
All I got to say is, you know, I'm just looking for some friendly debate. I heard two words, a disrespectful question and disingenuous. like come on, Jordan. Like come on.
I had this debate with my friend Irv Walker. He played at Florida when I was playing. Played overseas, and he was trying to say Caitlin was the GOAT, and I was like, that's ridiculous. That's like damn near saying, like, oh, Zion was the GOAT when the ratings were peaking. Everybody was saying, like, it's just crazy. Like, what do we? It would have been say, like, no one would have said Michael Jordan was the GOAT when he was coming out of North Carolina. That's crazy. That's nuts. No one said LeBron was the GOAT when he was, you know, going to the cat. That's nuts. That's a nutty conversation to have.
Yeah. Here's where you said that she is riding the wave, and you know what? Respect to you.
The wave higher. Yeah.
Okay. So I say a lot of respect to you, Jordan, because I think a lot of people are hypocrites I think a lot of people are saying, oh, why are they not making more money? Well, it's actually your fault because you're saying they should make more money, but you're not watching the games. You're not buying the women WNBA season pass. You're not, you don't have season tickets. You're not watching the games. You're not trying to get others to watch the games with you. And then you're complaining about the fact that they're not making money. So if there's more people like you, the WNBA would be making more money and they would be able to pay their players more. But there's not a lot of people like you who truly have done that. And that's where I don't think there is a wave, right? I think, in my opinion, she created the wave. I don't see that as a wave that was established beforehand because the WNBA has been around for 25 years and it's never turned a profit. It's never turned a profit.
The NBA didn't turn a profit after 25 years.
Is that so? That's a fair point.
The NBA was...
Well, this is modern.
Like, the NBA was... Yeah, I mean,
we're talking like 1920s and 30s where they were also milkmen and...
1930s. No, the NBA started in 1946, 1948, something like that. Okay. So 1950 years in would have been
where you have
If you go to the 70s, the NBA didn't even have a collective bargaining agreement at the same time. 25 years in, the NBA had no collective bargaining agreement. There was antitrust lawsuits. Have you ever heard of guys like Junior Bridgman, Oscar Robertson, or the Big O? The reason he's not as celebrated as he is because he damn near got blackballed by the NBA because he took part in antitrust lawsuits because there was no free agency. There's things like that. Now you have to go fact check because I'm not 100% sure on the details of all this, but I know for certain there was no CBA. So the WNBA in terms of business structure is much further along 25 years in than the NBA was. The NBA had drug problems. It was ratings wise. The NBA was maybe like eighth or ninth that people were watching golf. The NBA finals in the 1980s was on tape delay. It wasn't even on live TV. So this is 30 some years into the existence of the league. Now the WNBA has been, the ratings have been going up and up and up and up. It's up 27% since 2022. So to say Caitlin Clark made the wave is, again, that's just factually incorrect. There's been a slow wave. It's not a monstrous wave. And she is, again, she's riding it. She's taking it to new heights. But to say the WNBA hasn't been growing is just, that's just factually incorrect. So, and again, you talk about the WNBA, people have to watch, but then there's, like, I think it goes into my point. The NBA does things to make the game watchable, or they try to do things that make the game watchable. Like, there was illegal. They changed the defensive rules. They moved the 3-point line closer in the mid 90s to allow for more scoring for a season. You know, so that's my criticism sometimes of women's players who are friends of mine. You know, I have friends who play on the Aces, friends who play, you know, across the league. I even in London, we have Carly Samuelson, who's with DC now, and Shea Petty, who's with Connecticut, Megan Gustafson, who's in Las Vegas. And if you talk to them, sometimes, you know, they'll kind of balk at, and no disrespect to my homies, they'll balk if I say, you know, someone who says lower the rim to 9 feet. And that sounds so crazy, but that's what the NBA does. What is defensive 3 seconds? The NBA made that up. That's not a thing. They just made up their own rules to allow for space in the paint, to make the game watchable. So that's my criticism of the WNBA, is do things that are going to make your game more watchable. If that means, you know what I'm saying, like basketball. And again, it goes back into what we talked about. Money ruins the game. But at the same time, if you want to make money, then it's entertainment. It's not basketball. Like, people don't watch basketball for the X's and O's anymore. People watch basketball because it's an entertainment event. And nobody goes, like, people sit there and they think Coach Guard's a terrible coach, but there's about 1-2% of people in the stands who can actually break down at a high level what Coach Guard is seeing, what he's doing, and then criticize. And that's no disrespect to anybody. That's just because I can't go to someone else's job and really break down how they do it unless I pulled back the hood, see how they do it, get experience. And there's just not a lot of people who do it at the level who are even qualified to talk about it. So So for me, with the WNBA and with what we're talking about, just being the GOAT, there's a lot that goes into being great. There's a lot, in my opinion, there's a lot that goes into being great. There's a lot that goes into, creating ratings that are beyond, you know, just the player. a lot of that is the business side. I think if you would go into an NBA office, and I know a few people, I'm kind of like how you said you got a couple moles in at Wisconsin. I got a couple moles at the NBA office, like where, you know what I'm saying? Where it's like, if you listen to them talk, like the players really do not matter. The guy, there's a, the player, the top guys matter. But if you take out like Tyus Jones, my homie, he's amazing. One of the best players in the NBA, one of the most consistent players in the NBA. If you took Tyus Jones out of the NBA and replaced him with Chucky Hepburn, who Tyus is obviously a better basketball player, the NBA will not lose a dollar.
Yeah.
It will keep rolling. So, and to your point, Caitlin Clark is one of those people who could be a catalyst for money making. But I guess I just say that to, it's not just Caitlin Clark. It's not just, you know, Bria Hartley. There's a lot of people that put in work that need to push the game forward, which is why I can't just go to say, you know, oh, she's the GOAT because of ratings things like that.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Jordan, you're the right guy. This is a different kind of episode where, you know, have a little debate. This is what I was looking for. You're the right guy and you know your stuff. So, Jordan, it is 11:26 where you are, and I will not take up much more of your time. I told you 30 minutes, and now I'm going over an hour once again with you. So, Jordan, thank you again for your time. I'll just finish this up with asking you who you got winning the NBA Finals. That's my last question. Then we'll do a rapid fire round.
Oh, man. Oh, dope. You're still doing rapid fire. I like that. NBA Finals. Oof. I'm gonna go with my heart, not necessarily my mind. And I want to see the Celtics and the Timberwolves. I think that would be a great series. So I'll go with that.
Okay, that's the series. Celtics Timberwolves, and then who's
Celtics,
winning
Celtics Timberwolves, and then I'll go with the Celtics. Celtics.
Okay. Good deal. Good deal. I'm picking the Nuggets, but I want the Clippers. I don't know why I'm in the minority here. I like James Harden. I like James Harden. But
you know, see, that's a great way to end the episode because James Harden is one of my favorite players of all time. I won't stand
some common ground. Here we go.
I won't stand for James Harden slander at all.
In that 2018, what he did to almost beat the Golden State Warriors, I. That won me over forever. I don't care what drama has been around him since then. I saw him and Chris Paul, had Chris Paul not torn up his hamstring in game five, maybe that was.
Yeah.
They would have been the Warriors, in my opinion. And to do that was incredible. So that forever won me to James Harden. If the guy just wants to club and you know, chill with the strippers and hoop, like, man, like,
yeah. Let him do him.
Well, yeah. Let him do his thing, man.
Nah, he's one thing that, you know, that meme that's always like, what's an opinion that you'll get attacked for? And it's the dude with the knives in his face. I say James Harden was the second best player in the NBA from 2015 to 2020. And I won't back. And partially because KD and Steph were hurt for like a portion of that time. But yeah, that's a hill I'll die on.
Yeah. Well, no doubt. I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that at all, but yeah, let's move to the rapid fire round and get you out of here. All right. And hopefully I didn't ask you these questions 2 years ago, but here we go. Favorite basketball player of all time.
I hope you didn't either. Cause I might answer differently.
the one person might fact check you.
can I go? I'm going Ty. Like I'm going Jason Williams from Duke and Chris Paul.
Wait, and dogs or cats.
Damn, and KG dogs.
Favorite food?
That's changed. I'll probably say something like Caribbean jerk chicken, something like that. Caribbean food is climbing my ladder.
All right, good deal. Favorite holiday?
Fourth of July.
Okay. Favorite player you've ever had to guard?
Favorite player I've ever had to go.
Toughest player.
Derrick Rose, Eric Gordon.
Okay. Favorite movie?
Or Jacob Pullen. Favorite movie Coming to America.
Yeah, never forget that 2011 Kansas State game. So I think we talked about this earlier, but MJ or LeBron?
Yeah, Bron.
Okay. Who is the best player in the world right now?
Jokic.
Favorite sport outside of basketball?
Football.
Favorite musical artist?
American football. Favorite music? Kanye. Easy.
And last question, your biggest pet peeve? when people say the Caitlin Clark created the wave.
Yo, biggest pet peeve. I don't know, probably when people just say anything.
Gosh, just say I was kind of doing that like, in this podcast.
But like in real life, you know what I'm saying? Not in a podcast setting, not in a sports debate, just say anything.
Sure. All right, fair enough. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is Jordan Taylor. Great episode. Jordan, man, finish strong. Best of luck the rest of the way. And looking forward to staying connected along the way.
Man, appreciate you having me. Keep going. Enjoy always being on here. And it's an honor and a pleasure, man.